Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, June 17th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, and it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments, questions, answers, and testimonials, as well as being one of the most effective ways we know to help improve our lives day to day. If you have a comment, a question, an answer, a testimonial, or even a refutation that you would like to share, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. When you call that number, press 1. It'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. So we have time. We have 55 minutes, more or less, to entertain comments, questions, answers. We've been working with the set of tools that we find in the Way of Mastery, and we've been working with that through rather slow, methodical, I would consider it somewhat in-depth work, since January 10th. And the last segment that we read on Tuesday had to do with another idea, the idea of making conscious the limiting definitions that we have stumbled onto, bought into, created for ourselves, had created for us by others. And if we can make those ideas conscious, then we can start working with them. But whatever is unconscious, whatever we're not aware of that's in our consciousness, whenever it gets activated, if it becomes the strongest frequency that's activated within us, it drives our behavior. It drives our perception and therefore will control our behaviors. So the title of this lesson, Lesson 13, is You Are Unlimited Spirit. And it's working to get us to wake up to the fact that we're not just a body as a physical energy system, that we have the experience of the body as physical, and yet who or what is it that's experiencing that? Well, there's a consciousness. There is this awareness that transcends the physical body. And people will debate that. There's Eben Alexander, or Eben Alexander, I don't know how he pronounces his first name, as a neurosurgeon, was absolutely convinced that consciousness was just the product of random neural firings, because that was the science, and he bought into it 100%. Until he had a personal experience that demonstrated to him that's not right. That simply couldn't be the truth. And the personal experience was that he had an infection that got into his cerebral spinal fluid and shut down his brain, and everything they know from the, quote, science, close quotes, or hard science of physiology and biology and neurology, everything they know about it said Eben Alexander was brain dead. And he stayed in this suspended state of being in a coma and on life support, and the parts of the brain that science said are what give rise to consciousness were offline, and yet he had a full-blown experience, which he remembered, and he had access to awareness of events that happened in the hospital while he was, quote, dead or in a coma or completely unconscious. He had awareness of events that he shouldn't have had. And he writes about that in his book. So lesson 13 in The Way of Mastery is trying to point us to the very thing that Eben Alexander tries to point us to in his book, and Anita Morjani tries to point us to in her book titled Dying to Be Me. And that is this awareness that who we are, our consciousness, is not just the physical body. And Way of Mastery says, look, you have a consciousness. Who and what you are is a consciousness that's, it's far more grand than anything you think about. It's far more expansive than this life you're living right now. It's far more broad and deep and connected to everyone else than any thoughts about your gender or your height or your weight or your finances. So that's the foundation of lesson 13, or the first lesson in the Way of Transformation, is bringing our awareness to the fact that we are not just the physical body or the energies associated with the physical body. And in the very beginning of this 13th lesson of the Way of Mastery, the first lesson of the Way of Transformation, it suggests some thoughts that you sit with. Here's an exercise to expand your awareness. Think about this. Practice this as a mantra. I am not what I have perceived myself to be. I am unlimited pure spirit, and everything is available to me. Therefore, in this moment, I choose to open access to other dimensions of experience so that I might call this moment to me in a different way. So that's the very beginning of this lesson 13. And that's the first step in this way of transformation. Opening up your experience of life and of yourself beyond what the five senses will tell you. And then the second step is to bring awareness to the limiting definitions of yourself that you've bought into, that you cling to, that you're so convinced are real. And there are people, even on the spiritual path, who've been there for a long time, who occasionally get into that pattern. They say, yeah, but this is real. This is real. You got to pay attention to this. You can't be Pollyanna and ignore this. And in that arguing and in that firm statement, but this is real, I'm arguing for my limitations. And it has been said quite wisely that if I argue for my limitations, they are mine. And that's exactly what the Way of Mastery is trying to get us to understand from the first lesson on, where in the very first lesson, the fifth page, it says, nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. And the wisdom in this book knows immediately people are going to argue against that. And just a few short paragraphs later, it says, please remember, the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. So even though you can intellectually argue that you didn't bring this to yourself and you didn't want to experience this and you don't choose this or that, the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. The intellect was never designed to be your master. It's a simple tool that's designed to be picked up and used from time to time and put away quickly when you're done with it. So the part of you that is choosing is not the part of you that thinks that you're this age and that you were born in this place and that you've got this gender, and that you've got this set of accomplishments. The part of you that's choosing is this vast, grand consciousness that you have very little awareness of unless you practice. And once you become aware that you're more than just the physical body, then the second step is to start to look at and do exercises to help you uncover what are the limiting definitions that I keep arguing for. How is it that I keep thinking of myself in this small, contracted, bitter, hurt, angry, negative way, and how is that the dynamic that creates my experience when the truth is my consciousness is connected to all other minds? So on page 166, the last segment of this lesson is titled Creating a Transformation Journal. And the text reads, much has been given to you in this lesson. We would highly suggest for those committed to transformation that they go back through this lesson and be very clear about what is being shared. Begin to create your own transformation journal. Let it be used for no other purpose. Take the journal and find a picture that represents for you what is the highest, the deepest, the most passionate, and the most beautiful expression of love that you can imagine, and do not compare it to anybody else's. Just put it on the front of the journal. Buy a pen that will be used for no other reason than this. Find a place to place this journal so that nothing else occupies that space. Whether it is on your altar or in a drawer by your bed, find a place deliberately out of the field of Christ consciousness and say, ah, this is the place. Then, each time you begin a lesson, go through it carefully and write down the key points that are being shared. Decide what those key points will mean for you. And decide what steps you will take to incorporate them into your lived daily experience, even if that means that they are not going to be incorporated at all. Take 100% responsibility for your decision to write it down in your journal. For example, quote, well, I don't think I'm going to do that. I'm not going to write that in my journal, and I'm not going to practice that. I own it, I decide it freely, and that is the way it is. Close quote. Now, this, if you have a Western mind, like most of us who are listening to this, this seems instantly contradictory. We're being told that it's highly recommended, it's strongly suggested, and we're told that it's perfectly okay if we don't want to do it at all. What's important in that is, if we decide to do it, we take 100% responsibility for doing it. If we decide I'm not going to do it, we take 100% responsibility for choosing to do something else. So doing this particular exercise or not is nowhere near as important as practicing the recognition that we're creating our own experience, practicing the recognition that we're infinitely free, practicing the recognition that your free will cannot be usurped, and that every time you have a thought that this or that or so-and-so made you do this or that or this or that situation made you do this or that, it's never been true. So the paradox, the seeming contradiction that comes up, is really just another exercise in experiencing yourself as having choice. And as we've read about in the first 13 lessons, you need do nothing. You don't need to get a certain bank account balance. You don't need to pay your bills. You don't need to go to work at the job you work at. You don't need to survive. You don't need... And the reason they're saying it that way is so that you understand if you had the need to do this or that, it would mean you're not free. We talk in one of the euphemisms we use is golden handcuffs. So you get a job and they start giving you raises fast and furiously, and the next thing you know, you're making five times what you were making when they first hired you on, and you thought it was a great salary when you started, and now you're miserable at your job. Every time they gave you a raise, they gave you other responsibilities. Or you have the same responsibilities that you wanted to be doing, but the company got bought by somebody else, and now they're doing something unethical or bad for the environment, but you feel like you can't leave because you're making so much money. And you need to maximize how much financial gain you get from this job. If you feel you need to do that, you've created that belief, and you've created the prison for yourself that goes with that thought pattern. So when this lesson 13, page 176, when it says, we would highly suggest for those who are committed to transformation, that they go back and be very clear about what's being shared. Begin your own journal. Dedicate a journal just to this practice. Dedicate a pen to this journal and practice. So you're not writing all these other things with that pen. So you're creating a reverence. You're creating a sacredness for yourself for this practice. And then it says in the next paragraph, and we want you to own every bit of it, even if you say, yeah, I'm not going to make a journal. That's perfectly okay. The value comes in recognizing you are choosing. We are choosing in each new present moment, whether we think we are or not. So what value would there be in me having a thought, oh, this is stupid, I'm not going to do that. This mantra about how I'm more than a body, that's ridiculous. I believe what Evan Alexander believed. Well, the value in it comes if I own 100% the thought, the choice to value the thought, the tension or constriction or freedom or relaxation that gets generated within my experience of life in that moment, then there's value in it. Now, the recommendation is to create this transformation journal, and as you begin each lesson, go through it carefully and write down the key points that are being shared, and make a determination about what those points mean to you. Are they especially relevant in your process? Is it a guiding light for you? Is it a warning buoy for you to stay away from certain things? And above it all, really tune into the big theme throughout this book, which is you are choosing, you are choosing, you are choosing. No one and no thing can take from you your power of choice. You can create a hallucination, an experience of being powerless and small and weak, but that's never been the truth. And the minute you choose differently, all of that experience is ended. And as the Course in Miracles points out, there's a line in it where it says, you need only return to the original error in thought and see it clearly for all of the negative effects of that error in thought to be dissolved, to be wiped away. So instantaneously, you can walk out of the prison. Reminds me of a Guy Finley story, and Guy Finley tells the story of a man who woke up one day and he found himself in this world, in this kingdom, where he and all of his family members were working for the king. And the king had guards, and the king had a castle, and the king had, you know, work for them to do every day, and that's all they did was they just did what the king told them to do. And they worked at some form or another to maintain the kingdom for the king. They were not free. And he started to question, why aren't we free? Why am I doing this? And originally when he started asking, you know, why do I have to work for the king? Why do I have to work here? People would say, well, that's because that's what we do. Your father before you and your grandfather and great-grandfather and great-great-grandfather are your... all of your ancestors have done this. This is just what we do. And in the beginning, that was enough. But there was something stirring within this young man. And so he went to the king. And he said, why do we have to work for you? And the king just chuckled. Oh, I get this once in a while, because that's just the way it is. And coming from the king, you know, in the throne room, et cetera, it seemed to carry more weight, and so it satisfied him for a while. But it kept niggling at him. It kept working at him. And so he started to sneak out at night when he was supposed to be sleeping so he'd have plenty of rest so he could do the king's work during the day, and he'd sneak off to the library. And he started reading everything he could get his hands on about freedom. And he read dozens of books, dozens and dozens of books about freedom. And Guy Finley says, you may have noticed this. You can read an infinite number of books about freedom and still not know anything about freedom. And that was what was happening with this young man. But the more he read, the more he was motivated to read more, the more he snuck out, the more this other dissatisfaction was growing within him. And so finally one day, he went back into the throne room, and there was just something about his energy that put the guards on edge. You know, and shields and swords were clashing, and they blocked his way, and the king said, oh, no, let him through, you know, let's hear what he has to say. And the young man said, I just came to ask you one more time why this is the way it is. Why do I have to work for you? And Guy Finley would break into his story here, and he would remind us that every person in the story, every primary object and every person in the story represents a part of us, a part of you, a part of me. Every one of us has an internal driver that we call the king, and guards and questioners and rebellious parts and lazy parts and all of that stuff. So anytime there's a character in this story, it's all an inside job. So the young man asks, but as I mentioned, there's something about his energy, and it makes the king bristle. And the king says, and I told you, and a little bit louder and more forceful, that's the way it is. And your fathers and your father's fathers and your father's father's fathers have all done this, and that's just the way it is. And the guy one more says, he says, yeah, but why? And now the king is raging. And the guards clash their shields and swords and get closer. And because I am the king, I am the law, I make the law, and I'm the law, and that's the way it is. And the young man, with all of this intensity from the king and the guards, is shaking in fear, but he's reached a realization, and he stands rooted in place, unable to move forward or go back. And he says, with a voice that's got a quaver in it, but it also has deep roots, he says, I am the new law. And as soon as he said it, with that certainty, even though there was fear shaking all around him, even though he said it, the guards and the king began to step aside. And he turned and walked right out of the kingdom, a free man. Now, Guy Finley says, please note, this is an internal story. And please note, it's not about saying the words, I am the new law. He says, if you walk around mumbling under your breath, I am the new law, I am the new law, I am the new law, it's not going to go very well. This is not about me announcing to other people that I have the power to choose what I do. This is about me recognizing that every time I think I must do this or I must do that or I've got no choice or that person's making me angry or sad or scared, that's not true. And when I decide that I'm going to change my perception, my choice, and my use of my creative energy, which is mind energy, I redirect it and I create a new life instantaneously in that moment. So here's a recommendation that you create a transformational journal. And maybe you like that idea, maybe you don't. Maybe you decide, I'm just going to go back and reread these lessons many multiples of time. Or maybe you decide, I'm going to write each lesson out by hand because that's how my energy system and my mind takes things in better. Or you might decide, I'm going to start reading these lessons out loud at night as though I had an audience in front of me because that's how I get it in me better. The important point is not which path you take in that regard. The important point is that you understand the power of choice for how to do it and whether or not to do it at all is the core dynamic of this work. The text goes on and says, as you do this, by the time these lessons end, you will be surprised at what you have written in your journal. As you go through it lesson by lesson, you might also want to keep track of some of the things that you experience as you play with the practices that we give you. How are things changing? What experiences are you beginning to have as you explore the space just beyond the corners of your normal awareness? When you do the exercise that we suggested at the beginning of this lesson, reading that thought like a mantra, what images come? What thoughts do you notice? What colors do you see? You might choose to write them down, jot them down. You might have fun with it. If you're a creative type, you might want to pick up some markers or watercolor and draw out the images and the pictures that come to mind. The text goes on and says, for indeed, in every lesson, we will be giving you very specific, though what may seem as very simple, processes and exercises. But they are designed to give you access to what is already occurring at all times in a way that can foster and deepen your deliberate awareness. Deliberate awareness of what is always occurring in your cosmic self, in your unlimited self. Your consciousness is connected to all consciousness. Your mind is connected to all other minds. The only transformation you can experience in space and time is the reaching down from the depth of the ocean into one tiny temporary wave and readjusting the little foam drops on the tip of the wave that you call the mind-body of the little self, so that it begins to be a transparent conduit for an awareness of the ocean itself. That is the game of awakening. It is actually the most delightful use of time you will ever find. If you choose to do that, it will carry you beyond this world. Not from denial, but simply because you have outgrown it. There are dimensions of experience awaiting you that are so much grander than the dimension of the body-mind. But the way that you get to them is by bringing full awareness to what you are choosing to experience in each and every moment. For example, experiencing the soap on the skin in the morning shower. Wow, how amazing. Or experiencing a raindrop on the cheek, the shiver against the cold. the sound of a cat meowing or the thoughts of a dog across the street. I can't tell you how many times I read that and thought, thoughts of a dog? When I first started reading this. All of these things, you can call to yourself a deeper awareness of these things in this physical dimension. The question is, don't you want to taste it all? Don't you want to wrap yourself around it all? Don't you want to remember the magic that is around you? Out of that magic, the moment you're experiencing is being created from within your holy self. It has never been, and it will never be again. Mystery of all mysteries, dance of creation, reality of love. There is no higher state in the mind-body than to live as one who has been blown away and lives in that state perpetually. When you get to that point, then you are free, and the world has no hold on you. This lesson's message is a beginning for anyone who chooses to wrap his or her unlimited hands around it. But alas, we cannot shape the use of it for you. And if you do not like where you are, look no further than your little s self, than what you have chosen to value, how you have chosen to define yourself. We await you. We will reach out for you in a million different ways across space and time, into the space between your thoughts, not just through the mechanism of this course, but every time there's a little space open in your consciousness, we will indeed come and whisper, beloved friend, come and play. Come and play at a vaster level. It is all within you. Come and play. Come and play as the Creator's children. You are free. In this moment, you are as free as you will ever be right now. So ask yourself, how then will you use time? What will you construct out of your infinite field of awareness? What world would you look upon? What thoughts will you think? What feelings will you evoke within the cells? Where will you direct the body to be placed on a daily basis? How will you observe, or how will you enter into a relationship with each moment? Whether touching a dial or touching a body, it really makes no difference. Question for yourself, what will you bring to that experience? Is it Christ touching the shoulder of another, or is it just some limited, needy self? Who will you say that you are to this world? For what you decree is instantly. There is no way out of this responsibility. We suggest that you stop fighting it and birth Christ where once you thought something less than that has dwelt. Beloved friends, peace be unto you always, and always I am with you. I come to you not alone, but with many who have delighted in creating a resonance with me, and I with them, for no other reason than that power expands exponentially when minds join in love from a foundation of wholeness and not neediness. I do not need the one that you call my mother. She does not need me. But oh, how we delight in creating together that which extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful without end. Will you come and play with us? Will you choose to use your creative ability to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful in each new present moment? Peace, then, be with you always. And as always, Amen. So that's lesson 13. The first lesson of the way of transformation, the 13th lesson in the way of mastery. And we have some time for comments and questions and thoughts and understandings. 18 minutes left. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And I would remind us that the last two lessons, 12 and 13, both of them said very clearly, it is highly recommended that you go back and read this again and again. It's highly recommended that you recognize there's a level and a depth of value in what's being offered here that goes way beyond the words themselves. So, 563-999-3581, call that number, press 1, let us know what's on your mind. Questions, comments, answers, testimonials, anything that's gone on here in the past 11-plus years, how can we support you? How can we connect with you today? I had someone ask about, I forget exactly what was being stated, my experience over these last few days. The whole story is that a week ago today, actually 2 weeks ago yesterday, my sister, who was living with my mom, called and said, get over here, I need you. No explanation. So I canceled patients and went over, and my mother had lost the ability to stand on her own. So we entered a new phase of caring for her at home. Hospice had been involved for, I don't know, 2 years, 3 years. Started as respite care and then had to transition to hospice because of a wound. But that was a new phase. If mom can't move, that means mom's going to be in the bed at 94 years old until she passes. So over the course of the next week, the deterioration progressed. She quit eating. And so when we reached this a week ago tomorrow, it was evident that the body was shutting down completely. So we worked with hospice, and they, blessedly, they know all kinds of aspects of this. And they said, don't take her off the oxygen until we get there. We'll monitor her, and if it's time, we'll give her some meds so she stays asleep through the process, because she's been on oxygen forever, you know, many, many years. And if you take somebody off oxygen when they've been on it for all those years, it's very uncomfortable. And it's like suffocating. Sometimes it's a very long, slow process and agonizing. So what they do is they make sure they have the medications in them so they are asleep through that. And they'll stay there days if they need to, in 12-hour shifts around the clock with the person who's going through the process, if the body is that strong that it's limping along for days. And every 2 hours, they'll readminister the meds so the person doesn't suffer. Well, that hospice people came over and checked her out physically and said, oh, yeah, everything is shutting down. She hasn't. It's what we see when a person's ready to go. They quit taking in fluids. They quit taking in food. They have this inner wisdom that knows they want to be light, tight, and ready for flight, as the hospice person said. And so we all said our goodbyes, and what little consciousness she had to recognize us and say, yes, I'm ready. And she's been telling us she's been ready to go for a number of years. And so they administered the two little liquid things so she doesn't have to swallow any pills or whatever. And we just held her hand, and while she had the effects of the meds take over, and she went to sleep. And then we went in the other room and started talking about various things and plans for the future, and checked on her. The hospice people never left her side, and we just kept checking on the progress. And before the two-hour mark came where it would be needed to give her some more medication, they called us in and said, okay, she's ready for her last breath or two. And one sister sat on the bed by her right side holding her head. The other sister sat on the bed by her left side holding a hand. And I sat on the left side holding her hand. And another family friend was behind us. And we just told her it was okay to go. And we love her. And she had her last breath. So then other family came in. We kept the body there for the other family from out of town to come in, and we started preparations for the process of creating a celebration of life. And that it could not have gone any more smoothly. It was just a wonderful funeral home, wonderful, the church that she'd volunteered for at for a lot of years when she moved to this area 23 years ago. And she had been an active volunteer doing, she was their first president when they formed the St. Vincent de Paul charity. She was their receptionist. She volunteered her time there 5 days a week, 8 hours a day as their receptionist. She was a recruiter for them. She was an au pair for several families that had young children there when she was still active and driving. And so she had been wrapped around in love with that church and that community for a lot of years, 23 years. And so that's where the service was. That's where the visitation was and the luncheon after. And that all happened on Wednesday. And then family was in, and my sons asked for a day of just the three of us being alone, and that's what Wednesday was, to take time off to be with them. And people are slowly getting back to their regular work and or retirement life schedules. And that's, I don't do a lot on Facebook because it gets so contentious for so many people. However, I decided right before the funeral on Wednesday that I would post the obituary, and then I posted a couple comments because my brother had given me a, they were cleaning up, and he'd given me a card I'd sent to my mother, a homemade card I made years ago for Christmas that had some notes in it. And there was another write-up that I did for her 90th birthday. And so I combined pieces of that for a couple comments I posted on Facebook. And I wrote the following. Loving, strong, intelligent, beautiful, graceful, courageous, and consistent. These are the qualities that color my memories of my mother. Most of the best compliments I've received in my adult life have been met with me responding, quote, "Don't thank me, thank Betty and AJ," close quotes. Now, in my mind, this is not false modesty. This is just giving credit where credit is due. Every day I give thanks for the mother who raised me so lovingly and wisely. I give thanks for the mother who made it possible for me to spread love and wisdom in the world. Betty was a leader, and in my opinion, the best kind of leader, one who led by example. The example of a person who loves deeply and passionately. The example of a person who knows and works at their values and priorities. The example of a person who takes pleasure from helping others and pain from the suffering of others. The example of a person who puts family in the proper high position on their priority list. The example of a person who uses adversity in life to help build their character and utilize their strengths. The example of a person who does what is right, even when that is the most difficult of all options at a given time. The example of a person who knows that times of crisis are way too important to panic about. The example of a person who knows that the more one learns, the more one realizes how little they truly know. The example of a person whose life demonstrates that you never truly lose until you quit. The example of a person who knows that each slip-up, fall, mistake, or failure contains valuable lessons, and that the only way to learn those lessons is to admit, own, and take responsibility for the mistake. The example of a person who never did anything alone. She was always doing things with prayers to and gratitude for her Creator. This list could go on indefinitely. But Mom, I can only begin to thank you by passing along to others the love and caring you've shown me and our family. I promise to continue to do that to the best of my ability. So that was the two comments that I posted when I finally put up the obituary, which is through Davenport in Crystal Lake, and that's online if someone wanted to look at the obituary. And they did a fabulous job. They made it next to effortless for us as family to get through that process and all the details. And of course, like most of our funeral homes these days, they've got an online presence for the obituary and comments and or memorial videos, etc. So you can find that at Davenport, DavenportFamily.com, DavenportFamily.com. So, we have a few minutes left. How does that fit with anybody? What are your comments and questions before we get ready for our second hour and our weekend? 563-999-3581. What's on your mind? Call that number and press 1 and help us fill the last 4 or 5 minutes of the show. Or not. Lord knows, I can always come up with another Guy Finley story or just keep talking. Oh, 828, you're in the air.
Hi, Dr. Tim. This is Magda.
Hello, Magda.
I was thinking about you this morning and wondering how things went with your mom and the ceremonies and everything. And so I'm really, really pleased that you shared that information, and very happy for you that you and your family, well, in particular, I don't know how others were taking it, but that you were able to actually, it appears, enjoy the process as much as it can be enjoyed when we lose someone, because I think you understand the transition is just a transition. It's not the end of your mother's spirit. So anyway, thank you for sharing.
Well, you're very welcome and deserving. I've said a number of times over the years how bizarre it is that we live in a culture where the one thing that is absolutely certain once someone has been born is treated with such taboo nature and anger and upset and negativity. It's just, to me, and this has been going on for me since high school. When I was in high school, it came to me one time that they had this book, this little magazine called The Reader's Digest, and they would have this thing about how when you send in a saying, if they print it, they send you a little money. And so I would play around with different sayings that I might, you know, my senior year of high school. And I tended to be a fairly introspective individual. And I came up with this saying, death, dot, dot, dot. It's what we're all living for. and it just, I thought, this is great. Look at that play on words. And I shared it with a few people and quickly found out that was not going to make me popular because it was such a taboo topic and people said, oh, you're sick and all of that. So but the essence of it was, you know, something that stayed with me over the years as I worked on things to say, listen, every part of life is just a part of life. We don't have to run from it. We don't have to be afraid of it. We can choose how we experience it. And so anyway, I have always gravitated towards the people who can be there for somebody who's going through an illness or an injury or a death. And it's just been one of those parts of my personality, which was there for my mother and there for my father. And so it's part of my inheritance. And it makes these connections with people, my experience has been it makes my connection with people deeper and richer because I don't have to shy away from that process.
And I'm imagining that you have valued your time with your mother and other loved ones so much more in the process of living.
Well, it's essentially what we were reading about in Lesson 13 here at the end, where every moment you can choose to fully be there. And it's like the Japanese tea ceremonies where you just take such care with each aspect, each finger motion, each hand gesture, each sip of tea, each, you know, almost down to the molecules of the tea touching the tongue, that you appreciate it so fully that it changes your experience of life. It's deeper, it's richer, it goes beyond words and intensity. And what this lesson is trying to point out to us is that's there for us every moment we choose to access it.
Yes. Wonderful. Chills.
Thank you so much. Well, all right. Have those chills. Have those creator bumps, as they call them. I will mute you so you can listen in. I thank you for the call. And hold on, and you can have your comments when Michael and Jeannie are on. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim, and welcome back. And we've been holding the space for you and hope you have a, restful weekend.
Wonderful. You're very welcome and deserving. Same to you. Blessings.
Thank you. Bye. So welcome to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, June the 17th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that'll put you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to dial in, I'll just invite you to go to the website. Watch on your phone. The apps should both be approved before the weekend's out, and do an update to your app. And look on the website and see what new stuff we've got out there. If you're not on their mailing list, please go to whyagain.org and scroll to the bottom, and it says Join Our List. And if you've missed the past newsletters, under Multimedia and News, there is a section called Newsletters. And we have every newsletter that since we started doing this back in 2016. Before that, Michael did paper newsletters, and then we started changing over and doing electronic newsletters. So you can pick up all of those on there under newsletter. And be sure and join our mailing list if you're not getting them, or check in your spam box and make sure that it's not landing over there. And if you thought you were on our mailing list and you're not getting the newsletters, then go down to the bottom of the website and click join. And it just asks you a few questions and fill it out. And that adds you to Constant Contact, which is the medium that we use to send out the letters. And, Michael, we have got a hand up already.
Sweet. Let's say hello.
All right. It's Ann 760. You're on the air.
Welcome, young lady. Haven't heard your voice in a bit.
Thank you. I probably clicked in about the same time Magda did. I was going to comment to Dr. Tim, but I can still share it with you, of course. He just, when he was doing the lesson today, I perceived a newness, a rejuvenation, I guess I want to call it excitement in presenting that lesson 13 in the way of transformation. And so I was just going to say to him, his time off, even though it was, you know, celebrating his mom's life, which is good, and spending time with his sons was, it just seemed to boost him up to where he just was really powerful, I thought, in presenting the lesson today. So that it's great stuff. It's just reminding me to, you know, to look at things differently, which all your work has done as well. And anyway, it was a delight to hear him come back from that and also share how things went. So.
That's sweet. It. Powerful.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
Bye. Well, anything else exciting in your life now that we've got you on the line for a moment to share? Your process?
No, I just need to put into practice these things. I'm still dealing with I know what I was going to ask you. I don't think I've ever asked you. Maybe I have. When we call it a healing crisis, when things are going on and then, you know, we always check to see about our elimination and, you know, we've been doing the right things more recently. The word healing and then crisis just seems like an oxymoron. Can you comment about that?
Well, you know, we've also on occasion, we'll sometimes call the healing process. The reason why, and it's a term that's used in naturopathic medicine specifically, is a healing crisis, because somebody is, you know, somebody's rolling along and, gee, everything seems pretty good and things are well, and all of a sudden there's a crisis. And it's an honest thing to call it. If somebody goes into, gee, there's this great increase in elimination, and along with that elimination comes, you know, maybe some old pain, maybe some old, you know, muscular soreness or what have you. It might result in things like headaches and body aches and sort of and such. So it is a crisis, and you know, the word healing modifies that crisis to make one aware that, oh, I'm in a state where I've hit a new level of vitality, and I'm processing through something that I've successfully hidden from myself in the past and been able to pretend isn't there. And so it is an honest and I think an appropriate term, as opposed to an oxymoron, that it's a piece of information that allows me to, I think, in what otherwise I might consider to be a trauma. Now, if we call it a healing trauma, I think that would be more of an oxymoron. But to recognize that I've come to a crisis point where things are moving here, it isn't pleasant, and I'm aware that it's about healing as opposed to, oh, my God, I'm in a trauma again. So that would be my take on it. And
right,
again, sometimes you'll hear me use healing crisis, so if, for people who don't understand, you know, the crisis aspect of it, that but it's I think appropriate applied to become aware that this isn't my normal happy state. There's something here that's, you know, it's crisis. It's there's some energy moving, and since I'm aware that I'm in that healing space, I can stand in willingness, I can stand in the softness and openness, embrace it and move through the energy and accelerate the process, rather than most people think of crisis and what do? Their jaw tightens, their face tightens, their fist tightens, and they want to fight against it. Well, when I realize it's a healing crisis, I'm like, okay, so I'm not going to fight against this. I can soften, I can breathe, I can just embrace this. And literally something that, you know, it might have taken 10 years, a set of symptoms that might have taken 10 years to develop. If I'm in that, oh, I realize this is a crisis, this isn't Dr. Feelgood, this isn't fun, but I'm moving through something in willingness, I can take that thing that took 10 years and process through that energy just like that. On the other hand, if I'm just, oh, I'm in trauma, look, I'm in pain, look what's happening here, and I'm in resistance, I can take something that took 2 minutes to develop, and 10 years later, I can still be in the middle of it, as opposed to through and out the other side because I understand the principles. So that would
Perfect.
Be my take.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, thank you. Because I think this time it caught on for me better and overcame the resistance to that, calling an oxymoron, is because you took the crisis first and defined that first, and I think that really helped me, at least my perception anyway. So thank
Sweet.
You. And I think the whole way of mastery and way of the heart and now and this transformation is this transformation that's happening is part of that healing in the crisis of all the things I've, you know, been dealing with. And more of a ongoing basis, like when I went to the ENT doctor today with this cough and phlegm and all this stuff. And it's like, what I finally did was say, okay, you know what? Can I just come back and see you in 2 months and I will do what you asked me to do? Because it's just like this work. And I just realized that as I'm saying this to you, I've been resistant to do some of it that would have been more beneficial, and I would have, you know, had the healing in a certain area come a little faster. And it's the same thing with this cleaning the sinuses out and using this Neil med. I've resisted. And it had to do with a childhood thing when they stick with your nose and, you know, and I go, okay, I can stop that now. So I put a time limit on myself. Yeah. So I set that up because when I was in school, there was deadlines. And I think for me, the structure helps me. Okay, I said I was going to do this. Now I have an end date. I need to do it. And he gave me all the reasons why, and I understand that. And then he looked up in there today and with that little tiny camera, which was fun. Anyway, so
well,
it's something I need to do to clean up. But you know, the wind has been so much, the dirt flying around, and the stressors as well with all the stuff that's going on. So
right.
There's all areas, the spiritual, the emotional, and the mental, and, you know, the physical. So
right, and willingness compared to resistance. You know, if you look back at that word resistor or resistance in Aramaic, that's quite literally Satan. I don't want to feel. I don't want to deal with this. Stepping into willingness allows the energy to move. And it's a term that applies very well to, you know, electrical systems. It applies, you know, one of the things that happens when one engages in the still point breathing process, they can be in resistance. You know, if parts of the body aren't being allowed access to the breath, there isn't that energy flow. Resistance means that energy can't get through the opening. You know, it's kind of like you've got a, we can use a hose as an example. If I've got a hose and everything's wide open, man, there's a great flow of energy and that water comes shooting out the other end. But if I go in and I create a resistance in the hose, I bend it. I restrict the flow of water through the hose and now I get a trickle out the other end. Well, if my job is to empty the reservoir, that's going to take a long time if I'm just getting a trickle out the other end. Whereas if I go into a full open state with no resistance, I can move that quantity of water through there. In the same way, the symptomatic energy, if I'm in resistance, if I'm not breathing, if I'm not allowing my whole structure to open, I withhold the flow of energy through that would bring me to the other side into healing. And, you know, my take, you've heard me say this before in intensives, when we go into the still point, it's like going into a superconductor state. There is no resistance to the flow of energy through the system. So we can take the most traumatic of symptoms and bang, things are wide open, superconductor, it moves through and moves through high speed, fast forward. And that's the power of the breath and why, you know, so many times, say, for instance, in the forgiveness worksheet process, there's a reminder to breathe, keep the breath moving.
Absolutely.
So I genuine willingness.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Yes, and community support is always awesome. I can relate to the hose thing, and whereas before I've heard it, yes, but this time coming right off of the appointment and, you know, talking about the mucus is always flowing, and it's like, okay, so the water through the hose and the mucus through my sinus is kind of relatable, you know, so with that resistance, not allowing stuff to happen. So I received that. Thank you.
Yeah. And in naturopathy, you know, lemon has an atomic structure. Most fruits and vegetables, their atomic structure, the atoms in it turn to the right, the spin of the electron. The lemon is what they call lateral rotary. It actually rotates left, goes in the opposite direction. It's kind of looked at as a kind of a rotarooter. And if you take fresh lemon in water with cayenne pepper, which tends to break up congestion, and just a little bit of, say, maple syrup to add some sweetness and minerals to it, then you can start to, and if you take as much cayenne in it as you can, it'll tend to help to break the mucus up so that it's broken up. It, again, there's less resistance to this movement and cleans out, where when there's a restriction to that body trying to throw that mucus off, well, then it tends to kind of get old. And as it gets older in a particular part of the body, it tends to get a little putrid. And when it gets putrid, it's food supply for organisms that you don't want growing in your body. And so keeping that, if there is any there, keeping that mucus flowing inhibits the food supply for the bacteria that would grow on it and make things uncomfortable and messy. So lemon water, cayenne pepper, and a little maple syrup can be a wonderful thing to do if there's congestion happening wherever it is in the body. And that congestion can happen anywhere in the tissue structure.
Yeah, thanks for that reminder. Yeah, anywhere. Yeah. Probably because, you know, the mucus comes from the sinus. Yeah, it accumulates there, but then it's still, okay, but that's a great reminder that anywhere in the tissue, right, that can be happening. So the stress in the neck, right, tightness, resistance to doing other things can happen somewhere else in the body and still produce, okay, that makes sense.
Yes.
So
I used to walk people. Go ahead.
chili pepper. Does chili pepper do the same thing, or do I need that?
Yeah, anything with heat will tend to break down mucus.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, cayenne is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything with heat will tend to do
that. Okay.
Cool.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, you have a blessed day.
Yes, you as well. All right. Thanks. Blessings.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, Miss Jeannie, you sound like I've got a company with you, Miss Aria Rain.
Yeah, she tried to say her bed was too soft. She couldn't go to sleep.
Oh, interesting.
So I think she just doesn't want to go to sleep, and that's a good excuse. But anyway, so yeah, I told her. So she actually signed her name on your card, and so that was that's a big step.
A circle.
Can't hear you through the phone. I think Michael is attempting to call Renee. Are you there?
That's
yes.
Her. We've got her.
Hey,
we found her.
I was just getting ready to introduce that you were going to be with us. Hey, Nene.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Very happy to be here this afternoon available.
So what's happening in your world, Nini?
Well, I'm very getting very much involved in the Aramaic teachings in Spanish. And I have created the Meditation Shabbat. And I've also have some groups that we do the awakening sheet, the forgiveness sheet. And I find very interesting that whenever I have a group or sometimes private, all the goals, these people are cleaning and they want to cancel, they are very related to mine.
Yes. Yeah, smoke and mirrors. We will tend through resonance to pull people in who have the same issues that we're working on. That's a well-recognized principle in the work, for sure.
And this is people from Mexico, Canada, Venezuela, Panama, Argentina. I mean, from other parts in the world that I don't, you know, somebody recommended or they saw a post about, and I find it so very much interesting.
So what has that meant for you personally? How has that shifted things in your life?
Well, for me, I guess it's a new level of awareness and, you know, to be able to recognize that, like you said, you know, it's layers and layers and layers. And also because I'm working about the nutrition, and I guess we're getting a higher level of vitality to be able to process all that. And I just feel delighted that more people are awakening, and that I feel I think I've been proficient using it.
Right.
Uh-huh. And so I use the Shabbat Express and the other long worksheet. And yes, I find I'm more mature with my own feelings and thoughts. I'm able to catch myself faster.
Nice, nice.
Yes.
Enhancing your practice. Well, you know, I love what Richard Bach said. He says, we teach best that which we most need to learn. So now we know what you and I need to learn, because here I am still doing it 40 plus years later.
Yes. And I, Michael, like you said, I've been doing like 40
years. Say it again. Your voice cut out there for a moment.
Okay. That I've done about 4,800 worksheets, my own.
All right.
Yeah, plus the worksheets when I'm doing the workshop or the support group. And how it's possible that you cancel a goal that you've canceled 1,000 times. You get all these internal things coming out of you after you invoke Ruha.
Well, You know, that was the topic of our show yesterday in part in our conversation with Susan. And we talked about, you know, when you recognize that perception is a construct of the mind, you know, we open our eyes and we think we're seeing out there. We see the light and the fan and the wallpaper on the wall and the door handle and the mirror and the art on the wall. We think we're seeing things out there. But what's really happening is the brain is generating that image. And if you think of a tapestry, I used the example yesterday with Susan. Let's imagine that we have we go out and we buy a cheap pair of pillowcases, and we buy a 50 thread count. And 50 thread count, you know, if you pull on a little bit, it sags, it tears, it distorts, and is easily, you know, torn. But if I go out and buy a really expensive set of pillow covers or sheets, 1,000 thread count, that thread is very tightly woven, and, you know, it's hard to distort it or tear it or pull it because it's strong. Well, when you think of perception as being as a tapestry made up of 1,000 energetic resonances from who knows how many generations, and that our mind is like when you really think about it, it's magnificent to think that the mind creates this image that makes everything really look like it's out there, and to be so solid and so real. And so, you know, when they said to Yeshua, how many of these worksheets do we have to do? Do I forgive my brother 7 times? Is that enough? And his response is no, 77 times 70 times. What he's in essence saying is there are many threads going into the tapestry you call the appearance or the perception in your mind. And you're going to process those things out according to your level of vitality. And if you don't have sufficient level of vitality, let's say, to handle the thread that's threaded into your perception at this moment from this horrific trauma that happened to great-great-great-great-grandmother, if you don't have the vitality to handle that, you know, that's going to remain within your structure until you become vital enough to really take hold of that and process through that. And once you're able to take that one, let's say from great-great-great-great-grandmother, and bring it forward, and, you know, it might have been some sort of an horrific experience that she went through that's still resonant energetically within your structure, when you process through that one, every trauma that energetic thread within you contributes to the perception of the moment that is pained disappears, the ones based in that particular issue. And that means I can get on to the next level of work I need to do and the next. And when you realize that, you know, in the ancient Aramaic, they talked about how these energetic patterns that were called sin, and that just was an archery term that meant these energies that are off the mark are passed to 3 and 4 generations of those who are separated from love. Now, of course, if you go back 4 generations, where did that 4th generation back get their thoughts, their feelings, the threads of their perception, but from the previous 4? Who got them from the previous 4 generations? Who got them from? And, you know, if you put the pen to the paper and do the math, in 30 generations, there are over 1.6 billion people in our genes, in just 30 generations. You know, in 31, it's 3.7 billion people.
Yeah.
And so when you realize that all of that is in our history, all of that is in our genes, our generations, that story about, you know, being in the desert, lost in the desert for 40 years that everybody thinks was about a 35-square-mile hot sandy place, that isn't it. It's people who are lost in the generational patterns, unconscious of what's going on, never having worked through those things. So there's such a – when an event happens and it starts to move generational trauma, if someone has not done any of that inner work from those generations, the perception, the construct of the mind and the woman is all over the place. So confused, there's this pain from that generation and this one from that and that one from this and this one, and all the effects of that for the generations as each one stepped forward. And what we're really talking about doing with this work is processing through all of that and removing all energies that are off the mark from the whole perceptual system, right down to including our genes, so that when we confront a situation, the only thing that comes forward is a pure mind, a sound and purified mind that gives us only information that is true and accurate about the actuality that's happening in the moment. And, you know, you get to live in a whole different world at that point. That's the, if you weren't on the show, Jeannie set it aside as a special show. We did some work with the Beatitudes the other day where we tapped into or looked into that particular topic, and that the Beatitudes were a set of instructions for how to have a sound and purified mind that functioned where the underlying, the underpinning energetic patterns of our perceptual constructs were based in truth and love rather than generational patterns. And what the Beatitudes tell us is that right from the very beginning, that pattern for truth and love is in us. And if our generations haven't had the tools and haven't known what to do, then there's layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of who knows how many lives of crazy, painful, traumatic experiences. And, you know, when I step up to the plate and say, I'm going to do my work, it's about cleaning that out and getting to where the mind really presents only information. Perceptual constructs are all accurate about what's happening in the moment. And then, you know, it's like it's living in a whole different world. You know, they talked about be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Each worksheet is a renewing of your mind and going to another level. That would be my offering.
Yes. Yeah, I find fascinating even more. I mean, the more I do, the more I like, because I see more awareness. And another interesting dynamic that I observe is, for instance, I had an issue at work with one person. So I started doing my worksheets and do all my breathing, you know, all my ruha, blah, blah, blah. Next day, the issue, boom, exploded again. But that time, but the second time, I recognized, I said, well, you know, has to show up. And immediately I went laughing, and that was it. I mean, for me, it was an instant of, what did I say? Well, this is the worksheet I did last night.
So what I'm, if I'm correct, what I'm hearing you say is, where previously with this person in this issue, things got crazy. Energetic patterns of who knows what, rage, guilt, grief, pain, drama, trauma came in.
Control and all that.
Okay, and then you're seeing how you've done the work around it, and now what you get is simply truth from your mind rather than all that craziness, and you can stand there connected with love and truth and go, oh, I don't have to play this game. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Exactly.
It's like, that's what it's all
amazing.
About. Sweet,
amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, very nice. Well, delighted to continue with the work. And, you know, very delighted also that younger people are coming into the group.
Yes.
That's, you know, ladies in the 30s, that beautiful age. Well, all ages are beautiful. But I always tell, well, if I had this tool when I was your age, it would be a different creation. But anyways, I'm very happy that I could be like a mother in that respect.
Oh, wouldn't it be different? It was fun the other day. One of the things that Aria Rain is into, Aria Rain will be 4 in August. And, you know, you've probably heard us talk about before, she's really into anatomy and physiology. She just took an interest, and we'll watch, you know, I mean, literally sit for 45 minutes at a time and watch university level presentations on anatomy and physiology. And she has one particular favorite video that she likes to watch. It's on the kids' learning tube, and it's about the body.
Aww.
And what they do is they start out with this dancing cartoon creature, and they have a song about how they're going to explain all the organs in the body. And all of the organs empty out onto the ground, and then one by one, the organs sing to you and tell you about themselves. So, you know, the liver, here's what I do, and the lungs, and, you know, all of that. Well, Ari and I are sitting watching this. She had been working on, she was using plasticine or Play-Doh.
Yeah.
She was using Play-Doh to make the organs. And then she decided she wanted to watch this video. So we're sitting watching it, and the eyes come on for their part. And so, and they've got this little song, and the song goes, I am your eyes, I am your eyes, I see the world around you. Aria says, they just don't understand. The brain sees, the eyes don't see.
Oh, wow.
I mean, can you imagine if at four we had had
exactly
that understanding? I mean, 99.999% of the world doesn't have a clue that that's true. And here's a child of four that's able to say, oh, they don't understand. It's the brain that sees. I mean, like,
wow, fantastic.
You know, where's this girl going to go? I don't know, but I'm looking forward to watching, and it sure is a privilege to be part of it.
Yeah, I remember seeing on Facebook, the picture that she created, the organs.
Oh, right, where she was making the organs, yeah.
Yes, yeah. I remember that. Yeah. Wow, imagine, yeah, that's fantastic, fantastic. Like you say, Michael, each time I listen to your any of your videos, or I go, I'm back into the book, and I read a couple of pages as a new level of understanding. And it takes a lot of spiritual will and dedication to continue. I'm very grateful, and that gives me even more power or desire, willingness, you know, from the heart.
Sweet.
To continue.
Have you watched the link that I sent you for the new 3-hour Why workshop we did Saturday?
I saw one that was recently posted on YouTube.
Okay, I had sent you
a
text link to it. That's one we just did Saturday. That's kind of the latest, and it felt like it really came together well. So I was just wondering how that impacted you.
Yeah. Well, I just watched maybe 45 minutes. I have to go back and watch it better. Yeah,
sweet.
Very nice.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right, young lady, anything else on your mind?
Not really. Well, as I said, I'm writing the book about nutrition, superior nutrition, and it has helped me live even more, to be more conscious about what we eat. I've been using the Rita Romano book, remember? And,
yes.
And other authors that also relate how the vibrations of the raw food, good quality, improves you, and of course your organs, and give the capacity to heal. Definitely, yes. So.
It definitely makes a difference. And, you know, one of the things that I've been realizing as we've been growing a garden here is that you can't grow food in dirt. You've got to have soil, and there's a big difference. And most of the food that you go into, so-called food, you go into a grocery store and buy is grown in dirt. And so it looks like food, but it's really just a state of chemicals organized, not a state of life organized. And soil, the difference between soil and dirt is that dirt is dead. They spray chemicals on it, kill everything in it, and then put other chemicals in it to build something out of it that resembles live, actual food. Whereas when you've got soil that is alive, it creates food that has life in it. And, you know, I mean, it's awesome. We're growing. Last week or a couple of weeks ago, I pulled a couple of romaine leaves off of our romaine trees. They're almost 6 feet tall now, our romaine plants.
Measured
the leaf, and it was 6 by 11 inches for one romaine leaf, dark, dark green. And it's fun. Two or three times a day, we'll walk out and just pull a leaf or two right off the plant and eat it right then and there. And it's just awesome to be able to do that. And I'll spend 15 minutes chewing on one of these big romaine leaves, and you know, you can feel the energy that's there of this life that's grown in soil, as opposed to what looks like food but really isn't food, that's grown in dirt.
Yep. Well, one of the plants that I have when I moved to Venezuela, because I have a house there in my backyard, I'm planning also to have the tomatoes, the bell peppers, and everything that, you know, a few things there. And my brother, Paul, he owns a farm, and he is growing also produce. And you can see also the difference. With the love,
awesome.
With the right soil, with that desire to create more nature, it is absolutely fantastic. Definitely, yes.
It is. It's definitely a big part of the process. There's a video out there that's narrated by, let's see, what's his name? His name's not coming, but it's called Kiss the Earth. I think it's available free on YouTube if you haven't seen it. And they're talking about, you know, global warming, CO2, sequestering CO2. And one of the ways of doing this by getting it back into the soil through the growing of different plants and such, and that there are some real possibilities there, and that it's time. There's another video called We Must Grow. And they're pointing out that the rate we're destroying this, Kiss the Ground.
Kiss the ground.
Woody Harrelson is the narrator. Yes.
Okay. Kiss the ground. I will. Thank you so much. I'll make time again when I'm free to continue in this beautiful radio station with this beautiful work.
All right, young lady, well, keep us posted as to what's developing, and we'll look forward to hearing from you when you you get to Venezuela and how things are unfolding there. We'll hold you in a blessing.
Amen. Thank you.
All right, lots of love. Bye-bye. All right, Ms. G, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. We've got 22 minutes.
So if you're out there in listener land, it would seem reasonable that with the conversation we've had so far, especially about perception and how the mind generates the world we see, that probably there's some thoughts, some questions, some refinements that might be helpful. And if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, our call-in number is 563-999-3581, 563-999-3581. If you dial that number, you'll be listening to the show directly. And then if you push 1, you will find that you're having a conversation with us, Gene. We'll introduce you by area code. So how can we support you? Push 1. Let's talk about it.
Michael's phone just got disconnected, so he's going to have to dial back in. But yes, please push 1, talk to us. We would love to hear from you. Makes it easier than a monologue. Do you have a question or a comment? Michael is back. I can hear you through the wall, but not the phone.
Okay. I was just saying that I've got Ari Rain, who just came in, this awesome girl that we were just talking about, and she just came right over and laid her head, or her, just right in the crook of my arm, the way she did when she was a little tiny baby, and for a whole year. And you've got a banana you're eating, yes. But for a whole year, you used to lay right down there with your head right there on my shoulder and listen to the radio show while I was doing it. Do you remember doing that? Remember, Aria, when you used to do that? That's, yes, that is the TV set. So anyway, we've got somebody with a hand up, sweetie.
No, it is all quiet.
I want Dr. Binock.
Okay, we can turn Dr. Binock on for you. Aria is asking, there's a Dr. Binock who's a cartoon character that does anatomy and physiology lessons. And so. You want to do the one on the heart?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll see if somebody calls in while we're talking, and I'll turn that on. We'll put it on low so you'll be able to hear it, but I'll still be able to carry on with the radio show. So Ari wants to learn more about the heart today. That's one of your favorite topics, isn't it? That's one of your favorite topics is learning about the heart and how it pumps blood and how the red blood vessels in the body carry oxygen. They're called, what are they called, the red ones? Are they the arteries?
Mm-hmm.
And then the blue ones that carry the blood back to the heart, what are they called? They're the veins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We've been learning about those sorts of things.
They're also called, when they're together, they're called vessels.
That's right. They're blood vessels, aren't they? Yeah, they're all called blood vessels, and then they're different sizes and different kinds that do different jobs, aren't they? That's awesome that you understand their blood vessels. Amazing. So there we have, oh, and I just got a kiss. How cool is that? So it's pretty amazing the education this young lady is giving to us. And that we're getting to give it to her.
That pretty tickles? Sweet.
That tickles, yes. You are a tickling girl.
Boop.
Boop. So if you're out there in Lister Land, go ahead, Jean.
I was just going to say, since nobody's got a hand up, earlier today, Ari and I were reading some more of the spot books, the emotion books. And
right.
Playing with her little emotion icons. And we talked about the other day when she and I had a little struggle trying to get her dressed. And I told her that weren't always right either. And that I apologized to her like she apologized to me. And that we would do things differently in the future.
Sweet.
And she
what
pointed
great
to
modeling, sweetheart.
A couple of the emotions. And she said, these are what we were feeling. And I said, yeah. And I said, now we're going to get back to love. And I picked up the little love emotion. So she's definitely getting it.
Well, it's pretty awesome that that we get to play in that arena. And as we appear to be teaching her, we get to learn so much. We're definitely blessed. And then when I think about I just inherited her banana peel. When I think about the things that four or under four that she knows and understands, and that she's grasping more and more of every day, and what she's learning, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. That one? You want to do the dinosaurs? Okay, there we go. So here we are. So there you go. There they are. Okay, I'm going to go back and pay attention to the video show. You go ahead and watch your dinosaurs. One of the things that that is also, she loves dinosaurs, and there's a video that has all of the Jurassic Park dinosaurs and their names, so we've been looking at them and studying them. That one's the Pentaceratops. Penta means five. Look at that. He's got one, two, three, four, five horns. Hmm. a pentaceratops. So we've been learning about dinosaurs too, along with Aria. That's pretty cool what YouTube's got to give to us. Yeah, that's a big one, yes. So how can we support you? What's on your mind? Our calling number is 563-999-3581. And it would be awesome to have a conversation. You might hear a little bit of roaring in the background as I turned on the TV so Arya could study her dinosaur lessons. What's that one? That's a Gigantosaurus. That's a big dinosaur. So if you're out there in listener land, how can we support you? What's on your mind? Which one is that one?
And
that
Michael
looks
has
like an apatosaurus.
An interview with a it's a physician, right, that you have an interview with it too?
No, actually it's a podcaster that works in the realm of health, and I don't know a lot about him yet. It was actually a physician friend of mine who had done quite a bit of work with who had referred him to me, and what they want to do a podcast on forgiveness. So we've got a planning session coming up right after this show, yes. So we've got about 15 minutes to complete our conversation. And if you're out there and you have a thought for us, our monologue aspect is over, so it's time for dialogue. What's on your mind? How can we support you? What's your thought? Is there anything that we've talked about that you need some refinement on with today's show, or anything you want to share about using the tools?
Oh, there goes the name.
There is a lamb with that dinosaur, isn't there?
Oh, that's big.
Big. Gigantic. That's a Camarasaurus.
That's big.
Can you say that one?
Camarasaurus.
Camarasaurus. There you go. She knows more dinosaur names than I have ever known in my life. It's amazing.
He has a big long neck.
He has a very long neck, yes. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anything happening in the chat room or anything happening in the phone queue?
Nope, it is quiet.
Well, I would love to have more conversation, but if there isn't any more conversation to be had for today, I do have some prep to do for this planning session that I've got on Zoom. What is that one? That's a Gigantosaurus. Gigantus. No, wait a minute. Pentasaurus. He's got a lot of horns on him, hasn't he? So if we don't have any thoughts or questions, then I'm going to just suggest we do the closure on the show for today, and I'm going to go prep for our planning session. And so appreciate everybody who joins us and hold the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. The world needs it. You can give it. Thanks for joining us. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.